Everything away.
In.
Well, what happened to it?
Okay.
It's really bad.
Couldn't have gone very far because it was right. I had it right in there. Great start here today. I have memorized it, so I have to read part of it. Today's gospel comes to us from the fourth chapter of Mark, the parable of the growing seed. He also said, "This is what the kingdom of God is like. A man scatters seed on the ground. Day and night, whether he sleeps or gets up, the seed sprouts and grows, though he does not know how. All by itself, the soil produces grain, first the stalk, then the head, then the full kernel in the head. As soon as the grain is ripe, he puts a sickle to it, because the harvest has come." Again he said, "What shall we say the kingdom of God is like? Or what parable shall we use to describe it? It is like a mustard seed, which is the smallest seed you plant in the ground. Yet when planted, it grows and becomes the largest of all garden plants, with such big branches that the birds of the air can perch in its shade." With many similar parables, Jesus spoke the word to them, as much as they could understand. He did not say anything to them without using a parable, but when he was alone with his own disciples, he explained everything. The word of the Lord. Please be seated for a message. Our theme this month is fearless generosity. It's part of our stewardship campaign. And Pastor Phil gave us some words about it last week. This week I'm just going to give you some of my thoughts on our unique God, how unique our God is, and some thoughts on paradoxes, which I see as being sort of a continuous thing in the Gospels. Now, you all know what paradoxes are, but there might be a few. If we had some little kids here, we have a few little kids, they may not know exactly what paradoxes are, but they're a statement that may seem to be true, but seem to say opposite things. I remember once hearing a comment about a teacher was asking her class, "What is a paradox?" And they'd been studying geometry just recently, just before that. And the kids kind of looked around, and nobody really wanted to say anything. Ah, finally, one kid put up his hand. "A paradox is like a parallelogram." And she said, "Not exactly." But actually, it was an incredibly good analogy in a sense, because a parallelogram is just like a rectangle that's been squashed a little bit. So it changes shape. Something's pushed on it. So it's no longer exactly a parallelogram. It's not the opposite, but it is partly the opposite. It's different. And Jesus uses these paradoxes all the time. So, as I mentioned, this month we're talking about fearless generosity and choosing love, not fear. We're going to hear more about that in September. Now, last week, Pastor Phil gave us a message about fear, and he told us how powerful fear is. He said we can make people believe that they should be in fear. He gave us an example of how he had to give a debate, and it wasn't the side of the debate he wanted to be on. But he convinced himself and convinced the audience and convinced the judges that this fear is real. We have something to be fearful about, even though he didn't believe it was something to be fearful about. And Jesus is confronting us and his disciples all the time with these things. An example, for example, of fear's generosity would be, Jesus tells us, if you give something away, you don't have less, you have more. What? You give something away and you have more rather than less? How can that be? For example, if you have $100 and you give away $10, you have $90. And Jesus might say, you've gained. But we all know that Jim Prentice, who claimed to understand math, and most of you also, would probably say we have less. If you talk to your kids in school, they'd all say, my teacher says, I got less. I think they call it subtraction. They still call it subtraction, or does it have a different name now? 100 minus 10 equals 90. And any kid would tell you, we got less. And of course, we teach our children this all the time about, you know, how money works, how to be frugal and whatnot. And if you have some money and give some away, you get less. And Jesus tells us, no, it's not exactly the way. It's actually different. So we're a strange group of people called Christians. And Jesus says that we have more because we're sharing. We're showing our love. Jesus tells us we actually gain when we give things away. And so in many ways, our belief is also a paradox in many cases. For example, Jesus tells us that the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Now, there's a real paradox. He also tells us that if you go on shift for your job at 8 a.m., the guys who go on shift at 7 a.m. or 7 hours later and quit at 8 hours afterwards get the same amount of money that you do. Now, the unions wouldn't like that, but this is what Jesus told us. Jesus said, if you come to the job early, you get your wages. You come to the job almost when the job is over, you still get your wages. A real paradox. He's always giving us examples that we're supposed to live differently from the rest of the world. And you know what? We're not very good at it. We listen, we read his parables, we think about them, and we have a difficulty in reacting to them that particular way. I think especially the concept of if we give away some of the things we have, we actually gain. We gain because we've shown our love. We've gained because we've helped others in the world. We're supposed to behave differently. So we have these big fears of giving things away. For example, hoarding is not an uncommon problem. We like to hoard physical things and money. Our society says, save your money. You've all heard that one. I think there's a guy on TV who wears a suit and promotes some orange company. I think they called it Ing, but it went broke. He calls it Tangerine now. He says, save your money. And what for? Well, for yourself, basically. We're supposed to, but Jesus says we're supposed to love ourselves last, basically save our money for ourselves last. We're supposed to love God first, our neighbors, which is everybody else, second, and ourselves last. And we say, that's kind of crazy. We can't do it, but we'll think about it. We basically think it's impossible, and Jesus says, no, it's not really impossible, just awfully difficult. He tells us to fear our enemies and never to be afraid of being alone because we're never really alone. Nothing but paradoxes. So just generosity that Jesus talks about is a paradox, because he tells us if we give, we gain. And our society, our world tells us if we give, we lose. Another interesting paradox that came up, at least I thought it was a paradox, was during the Easter season when Pastor Laura emphasized, we've got a wounded God. Our God is wounded. And I figured, I sort of know this in a sense, but I never really thought about it that way. From the time you go to Sunday school or even prior to that, we know the message that our God was, that Jesus was given a crown of thorns and was whipped and lashed, hung on a cross. He was abused. We sing or hear the Messiah, where the words are that he was bruised for our transgressions and suffered. I never really thought about that same way. I said, what? We've got a wounded God? This is really weird. Who else? What other, well, of course there only is one God, but what other religion has a God they consider wounded? Only our God is one who's wounded. And I thought of this, what a contrast to the Old Testament. Because in the Old Testament, the children of Israel are always bragging about their God. My God's better than your God. There's examples, you know, every book and every couple of chapters are where God does something better, something more impressive than the other people's God. The children of Israel were on it all the time. We've got this God who's better than your God. Our God can do anything more than your God. Your God's a wimp. Our God always comes out on top. And yet now, New Testament times, we've got a wounded God. Really, a real shock in many ways. And I think the more I think about it, I realize this is really, really different. Just one of these tremendous opposites that we have. So back to what our society says. Our society says, save. The federal government tells us that we spend too much, we have too much debt. And what do we do? What do we do with this debt? Did we borrow money and give it away? No, for the most part, we borrowed money and made our houses bigger, bought a Mercedes, bought a speedboat, went on a trip and things like that. And then the feds say, wait, we even need a tax-free savings account because we're not saving enough. But And then that reminds me of the Old Testament concept of tithing. I'm going to mention an example to you, which was a bit of a shock to me initially, but when I was in grade 9, I was living in or for a number of years around then, living in a small Roman Catholic Francophone community in Manitoba. And in that particular community, the students were almost all Catholic, and the teachers were all nuns, and the students had to go to catechism every day for about a half hour. But I got to leave being non-Catholic, lucky me. And so I'd hang around and wait for my friends to come out from this. And one of the things that every year they got blasted with this concept of tithing. It was just driven into them. And what's our reaction to tithing? Well, for most cases, we just kind of ignore it. That's an Old Testament practice. We don't need to do that now. They were really, really sick of this. And so they joked about it. They made fun about it. And in a way, they made sure that their teachers didn't hear it, and probably their parents didn't hear it. Probably got passed on from other people. I heard it for a number of years, so it kind of sticks in my mind. There were some verses I've forgotten, and some verses that I can't say. But they thought they wanted to kind of relieve themselves, so they'd have this little ditty that they would recite, and. It includes the Bank of Montreal. The reason it includes the Bank of Montreal because most of the little Francophone communities in southern Manitoba had a Bank of Montreal or a Bank Nationale. So after class, they'd be walking on the sidewalk, and they'd be singing, "Jesus saves his money at the Bank of Montreal. Jesus saves, Jesus saves, Jesus saves. Jesus walks on water. He's a lifeguard at our pool. Jesus saves, Jesus saves, Jesus saves." And they thought this was fun. I was kind of shocked initially, and I got over it because... And my background that time was Missouri Synod, and we didn't joke about God. I'm not quite sure why, but anyway, I don't think Missouri Synod joked about anything. But the kids I went to school with did. They were tired of this being hammered with the same concept. Now in our gospel lesson today, it says the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed, which when sown upon the ground is the smallest of all seeds of the earth. Yet when it is sown, it grows up and becomes the greatest of all shrubs or all garden plants. Now, those of you who do some gardening know there's a lot of hyperbole, a lot of exaggeration in here. If you've ever planted lettuce seeds, you know that lettuce seeds are an awful lot smaller than mustard seeds and a lot harder to plant. And I don't really think of mustard seeds or mustard plants as being the greatest of all shrubs, but Jesus is making a point here. You take that little tiny mustard seed, and it becomes something really, really big. And he's telling us that's what we can do. We can take something small, insignificant, and make it big and really great. Now, of course, Jesus' examples in the Old Testament or in the New Testament at that time were almost all agrarian, because that's what the people knew. People were involved in planting and harvesting and taking care of animals. If he were around today, he might have used different examples. He might have used artists, say, for example, rather than farmers for his examples, because artists, for the most part, take something insignificant, something small, scrap metal, some paint, sometimes old paint, sometimes new paint. We had an example here, it's gone now, but last month, where our artist, Pastor Phil, took cardboard. Yay, cardboard, something that's pretty inconsequential. We use it in great quantities. It's everything we buy just about comes in a cardboard box. We throw it out or we recycle it. And he took cardboard, something that's just blah, and he made the Easter scene for us, the complete Easter scene. So it's a good example of how an artist can simply take something minor, inconsequential, and make it into something impressive. So Jesus is always talking to us about the power of generosity and the power of giving and what it can do. And yet our society is always telling us to protect what we have. And Jesus is always telling us, don't worry about protecting what you have. He says, you've got me, and we tend to forget that. We tend to think, someone else has got to take care of me in my old age. If I give away some of my money or don't take care of it carefully, what's going to happen to me? Jesus says, don't worry, and we find it difficult to do. So we have an invitation to change our perspective on what we have and be fearless in our giving. Now, as I mentioned, I think of our God as being really unique, and by our God, I don't mean just the God of this congregation, I mean the God of all humanity. He was wounded, and he died. He said, the smallest will be the greatest, the first shall be last. And he said, save your money at the Bank of Montreal, and he also walked on water. He really was unique. And we need to remember that his uniqueness is something that he has asked us to follow along with and trust and know that if we just simply do some of the things that he instructed us to do, that we too can benefit, and that when we give, we gain rather than losing. Thank you for your attention today.
Thank you.